Just want to say thank you to everybody that's here right now.
Yeah.
Because this is the first ever Rocky Pod Expo, and it's like seeing that people care about it. That's cool, man. Because we as podcasters, we all love what we do, and we love the response that you guys give us. So, you know, round of applause for you guys for showing up for something so cool.
Alright, so I'm in the car and it's Monday.
Turn left onto State Road N. State Road N.
It's Monday, August 28th. And
in 800 feet, turn left onto the I-55 North Ramp to Junction Road.
I'm driving home from the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo. And didn't get
turn left onto the I-55 North ramp, then merge onto I-55 North.
I didn't get a lot recorded at the expo for the podcast. I had huge plans to record everything, but what I brought is what I'm recording on right now, which is my Tascam digital 8-track, which has an internal mic. It sounds good, but it's not portable.
Continue on I-55 North for 52 miles.
And, for example, Eric Camaro very wisely was walking around with a handheld portable recording device and recording things. And if this happens again next year, that I will be purchasing something and doing that, because that's what I should have been doing. But in order to record, I had to get people over to my table, and it had to be at an opportune time, and it had to be when I was available and they were available, and we would sit down and record something. And it just didn't happen. And I had such great conversations with people that just came up to me as I was walking through the venue. And for example, Jay, I don't remember your last name. Please send me an email, rockandorrollpodcast@gmail.com. Gentleman Jay approached me, listens to every episode. I've never heard from him before. It's one of those things about doing a podcast. Here's this guy who loves the show, and I don't even know he exists. And then he walks up to me at the expo, and we have a great conversation. And I sold him a button for $20. He's such a nice guy. I had such great... Meeting Brad Page and his wife was such a pleasure. Wonderful people. Drove down from New Hampshire and worked the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo into their vacation. And I hope you guys enjoyed yourselves. It was great to meet you and talk to you. It was wonderful. Joe Beck to approach me at the expo. It was great to meet you. Thank you so much for your kind words. And I'm really glad that all these people find the podcast and enjoy it. Like I said to somebody at the expo, I feel like with a lot of my episodes, I'm making mixtapes. I used to always make mixtapes for people, or mix CDs for people. And that's really what I do a lot with the podcast. I make a mixtape and then I just put it online for people to listen to. And in essence, a lot of my episodes, that's really what they are. The Nashville Rock and Pod Expo was so great. I feel like I'm leaving Tennessee with 20 plus good friends that are spread across the country and in Canada. Lee and Brian, you know who you are. And wow. I don't think a lot of people have an experience like that in their lives. So I feel very lucky. This whole weekend has been unbelievable. I left early Thursday morning, August 24th, I drove to Indianapolis, went to 4 record stores in Indianapolis, then I drove to Louisville's Eastern time, so it was an hour later than I thought it was going to be. I only managed to go to 2 record stores in Louisville, then I drove on to Nashville, and I get to the house. Henning Mielke flew to Nashville from Germany, and he got an Airbnb, and he let four of us crash there with him. It was a house with three bedrooms, one bedroom had two beds, and two bedrooms with one bed and then a couch. And Brian Sword got stuck on the couch. Me and Joe Royland were in the bedroom with two beds, and then we've got Henning and Greg Renoff of Van Halen Rising, all of us in this house. So I get there Thursday night, meet Greg Renoff in person for the first time. Amazing. Thursday night, go to bed, get up Friday morning, and me and Greg drag Henning to a huge record store, bookstore in Nashville called McKay's. That was awesome. Wow, what a great, a huge, huge place. Cheap records. I didn't even get to look at the books. Then dragged Henning to another record store called The Great Escape. And while we're there at the record store, I get a text from John Lamoureux that he just got picked up at the airport by Mr. Billy Hardaway. And let me thank you, Billy, so much. Billy took off work on Friday and shuttled people back and forth from the airport because so many people were arriving in town. Billy, huge help. Can't thank you enough for that, for doing that. Wow. So Billy and John Lamoureux, who you'll know, he's been on the podcast. He's from The Hustle. I love John. John is actually one of my very best friend's brother-in-laws, which is just a coincidence that he's my friend Chris Standish's brother-in-law. They're married to sisters. So that was just a coincidence. John has entered this great community of podcasters, and it was so incredible to meet John at the record store. Then we went downtown and went to a barbecue place. So we parked downtown Nashville, walked around, went to a barbecue joint. Then I get a text. Chris Sinzak has picked up Joe Royland from the airport, and he drops Joe off at the barbecue restaurant. And so now we've added Joe Royland and John Lamoureux to our group. We head back to the house. Brian Sword arrives at the house. And then, let's see, what did we do? That's when I get a text that Ken Mills has arrived at the hotel. So I drive over to the hotel, the inn at Opryland, where most of the podcasters were staying. And I get to meet Mr. Ken Mills, close friend for years who I've never met in person. And Joey Haney's there, Mark Striegel and John Astronomy, and Mark and Emily Striegel and John Astronomy are there. Julian Gill is there, and Mark from the Kiss FAQ. Christine the Butt Queen is there. Hope I'm not forgetting anyone. I arrive there with Greg Renoff, Joe Royland, and Brian Sword in tow, and then meet Mr. Ken Mills, and then we're waiting for Gary Schaller to arrive. And if you're familiar with these names, Gary Schaller and Ken Mills have been doing the podcast for over 10 years, and they have never met. And so I get to witness the moment that Gary Schaller and Ken Mills meet, and that was an amazing thing for me to witness. So this is Friday. At this point, what did we do then? I guess we went and got some dinner. Oh yeah, we went to another barbecue joint, Edley's, second barbecue joint in the day. At Edley's, I get to meet Matt Porter. I meet Sonny Pooney and Stephen Michael, who you'll remember, they did the No Shame episode with me, and they now have started their own podcast called Growing Up Rock. It was amazing to meet them. I hope I'm not forgetting people. It was such a blur. It was so great meeting all these people. This is in one day that I'm meeting all of these people. So we're at the restaurant. Then we go to the Cobra and get to see Denman live. Amazing. Denman. Nashville band. Let's hear a song right now by Denman. This is the first song they played in the set. Huge smile on my face. This is One Night Love by Denman. Show at the Cobra Club was pretty packed. We get to see Desolation Angels, Denman, and The Tip. The Tip were also great at the club. Wait, I met Michael Butler back at the hotel. I forgot Michael Butler. After I met Ken Mills, I'm sitting there and I turn around and Michael Butler from the Rock and Roll Geek Show is standing behind me. So I met Michael Butler Friday. Michael Butler was also at the club for the show. Let's see, at the club also I get to meet Andy LaFon. I get to meet Lee McCormick. Eventually shows up at the club from Tramps Like Us podcast. You'll remember Lee from he did the very last episode in the Iron Maiden series with me, I believe, and you'll hear him. He'll be back on Rock and Roll, and he'll be back in our story of the weekend as well. Wow, the club, the Cobra, that night, that's when I meet Aaron Camaro and Chris Sinzak for the first time. Amazing. Yeah, I'm rattling off the, I'm meeting all these people for the first time in one day, and I'm not even done meeting people, not even close, really. So the show is great. We go home, go to bed, because 8 o'clock we're going to be at the venue, the Music Valley Event Center, for the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo. So Saturday morning, get up, me, Greg Renoff, Joe Royland, Brian Sword, we head over to Shoney's right by the venue, get some breakfast. Gary Schaller, Julian Gill are there. Leaving the Shoney's, walking across the parking lot, who's coming toward me? Dr. fucking Wadzilla, Ralph Fiera, and Ian Wadley of the Rock and Metal Combat Podcast. I meet them in the parking lot of the Shoney's Saturday morning. Amazing. Walk over to the Music Valley Event Center. Walk in, mind blown. The record show is already getting set up. There's records all over the place. Vendors selling records of memorabilia. People are starting to set up their tables already. So I get my table set up. Hopefully you saw it on the Facebook page with my records and my 8-tracks. I get my whole Rock and or Roll table set up. In walks Craig Smith and Eric Miller of Pods and Sods, and I meet them for the first time Saturday morning as we're setting up for the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo. And it's a blur from there. From 10 a.m. when people start coming in to shop for records until 10:30, 11 p.m. when the jam session wraps up and people start leaving. So I was in the venue for at least, I'd say, 14 hours, and it was a blur. It was an absolute blur. And the idea of recording the whole time, I wanted to see what was happening on the stage. I still missed a lot, but I wanted to see most of it. For example, 11 a.m., first thing, it's live, the podcast and friends. We've got Julian and Gary and Ken and Matt Porter and Christine and Courtney Dold and Joe Polo. Oh, they're all on stage together. They pulled me up there eventually. Ken forced me to get up there. But I hope I'm not forgetting to include anyone who was up there for the podcast. So the podcast panel goes off. At this point, Drunken Lullabies gets up there. I didn't even see any of Drunken Lullabies. I was dealing with other things. Can't wait to hear that episode when Dustin released it. Speaking of Dustin, another person I got to meet at the venue on Saturday was Dustin Wyckoff, who you heard on the T-Rexstacy episode. Met him there. So Drunken Lullabies did a live episode. Then came... what came next? One o'clock, the producer panel. Yes, 1 o'clock was the producer panel, I believe, with Michael Wagner and Toby Wright. Kevin Beamish ended up not making it. Forgot to mention that when Ken pulled me up for the podcast panel, at some point, I think Joe Polo was speaking negatively of Hot in the Shade, and I made a negative comment about Carnival of Souls, and later realized that Toby Wright, who produced the album, was probably in the room when I said it, which I did not realize at the time. So the producer panel goes off. Chris Sinzak and Eric Camaro moderate that with Michael Wagner and Toby Wright. 2 o'clock, I'm busy interviewing Rick Rule from Every Mother's Nightmare over at my table, which we'll hear that interview later in this episode. And then I missed the whole Talking Metal. Talking Metal did a live interview with Mark Slaughter that I completely missed, so I can't wait till they release that and I get to hear it. 3 o'clock. What happened at 3 o'clock? How could I forget? 3 o'clock, heavy metal parking lot reunion. Home run of the day. We played the movie on the big screen. 16-minute heavy metal parking lot film, and then screen goes up. It took a little too long for the screen to go up, but eventually the screen went up to reveal on stage in between Chris and Aaron. We had Graham of Dope and the DC 101 guy with one of the filmmakers, I forget his name, in between them. And Chris and Aaron did a great job of interviewing those guys. It was really funny. And then they took a few questions from the audience. And I was about to ask a question. I was about to get up and get in line to ask a question when Christine, the button queen, comes and gets me and says, "We need your recorder because Ken's going to record a Sandy Gennaro interview for Zilch." So they used my recorder for about an hour and a half, and that was, at that moment, I actually had an opportunity to maybe record with Brian Sword and Greg Renoff to do The Worst of Van Halen, but my recorder was in use, so I lost an opportunity there, but I'm really glad that they got a great interview with Sandy Gennaro. But I could sort of blame Ken for me not getting to record The Worst of Van Halen at the expo. That'll be coming up in a future episode, though. So at the time that, at that time, I get Ken set up with my recorder. Meanwhile, on stage, John Lamoureux is doing a wonderful job of moderating a panel that we call the Songwriting and Collaboration Panel with Walter Egan, Gunnar Nelson, Anthony Corder from Tora Tora, and Robert White Johnson, a prolific songwriter for many years. That was such, I only saw like the last half of it, but it was so great. Can't wait to hear it when John releases it on The Hustle, because it was wonderful to hear those guys talk about writing songs and just about the business of being a songwriter, trying to make that your career. It was great. We had some really special things happen on that stage, and a lot of people missed out. A lot of people would have loved to have seen that stuff, I'm sure, but not everybody could make it to Nashville, so... But we're going to get to hear it all on all the different podcasts. So yes, the songwriting panel was great. Really great. Then comes Rock and Metal Combat live. And they cleared the room. Now this is the time where the people start filtering out. Now this is the point where the people start filtering out, the crowd starts thinning. But Ralph and Ian, they had me laugh my ass off. They even made me get up there on stage with them for a while. So I got to witness Rock and Metal Combat live. I could cross that off my bucket list. And then, let's see, also... forgot to mention that over the course of Saturday, I got to meet Randy W. Hall and Dan Menard of that Dandy Classic Music Hour. Wonderful to meet those guys. And anyways, getting off track. So after the Rock and Metal Combat comes the Great Albums podcast. And I had originally scheduled things so that Brian and Bill would not have to follow Ian and Ralph. But schedule got shifted around, ends up the Great Albums followed Ian and Ralph. And exactly what I pictured happened. It was a little bit of an awkward transition, but I think that Bill and Brian did a great job. They went up and they did an episode about the Pearl Jam album Backspacer, and it was really fun to watch. You know, seeing a live episode of a music podcast like this was really fun. It was very cool, and I really enjoyed it. And I got to talk to Bill and Brian quite a bit at the expo. They're really nice guys, and I'm glad they came. And I'm glad they got a cool episode out of it, because I thought it was really good. So go check out the Great Albums Backspacer episode if you want to hear another live episode from the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo. And I'm going to get Brian and Bill on the show to do a No Shame episode coming up. So we'll get to hear them on Rock and or Roll too. So let's see. I'm heading towards St. Louis right now to go to some record stores, but it looks like I still got 29 minutes before my exit. So let's see. So the Great Albums, they did a great job with their spot on stage, and then after they were followed by what we called That Potty Classic Soddy Hour. It was Randy and Dan with Eric and Craig from Pods and Sods. So it was That Dandy Classic Music Hour / Pods and Sods. They did their 5 favorite Kiss songs. It's a lot of fun to watch. Those guys are great, very entertaining gentlemen. They did a great job on stage. With this cast of characters, getting to see them live on stage performing their podcasts, you can't top it. It was awesome. So that was the last live podcast of the day, and then this was the time that Mr. Lee McCormick, who was organizing the jam session, decided to be off at dinner. But he comes back. Most people have left. There's not a whole lot of people left in the building. But let me tell you, if you left, you missed out, because the jam session was fucking awesome. So much fun to watch. Not as much fun for me to be on stage, but when I was off stage, I was just delighted. I was laughing and smiling, and the first song, Joey Haney and Gary Schaller got up there and sang Got to Choose. A lot of these videos are on Facebook. They did Parasite. Gary Schaller just shredded it on the guitar. The guys from I think Dennis and Alan from the Ages of Rock podcast. Those are some more guys I met. I think it's Bill and Dennis and Alan who do Ages of Rock. Great guys. Great to meet them. And they played, I think it was Alan and Bill or Alan. I'm sorry, guys. They played on a lot of the songs. Bill or Dennis played bass and Alan played guitar. I think I got that right. And Lee McCormick played drums on a lot of the songs. Joe Polo played drums on some of them. Joe Polo is from Podcast Rock City. Got to Choose, Parasite. They did I'm Not Your Stepping Stone with Christine the Button Queen singing and Craig Smith playing guitar, I believe. I know Craig played on Circle Sky. Ken Mills played bass on Circle Sky. I don't know what I'm forgetting about the jam session. What was the other song that Ken sang? Did he sing Parasite? I think Ken sang Parasite. I got up on stage, played Rip It Out. I didn't even make any mistakes on Rip It Out. So Rip It Out, it was me and Gary Schaller on guitar. Gary nailed the guitar solo. Julian Gill, author of many Kiss books. It's great to meet Julian. Julian sang Rip It Out because I decided I couldn't pull it off. Julian stepped in and sang it. Rip It Out, we had Brian Sword on bass, Lee McCormick on drums. So we had the Hoser rhythm section rocking it, and me and Gary on guitar. Rip It Out was awesome. What else happened? Lee McCormick and Brian Sword did Badlands. I'm trying to remember who played drums. That might be the one that JTB. No, JTB played on I'm Not Your Stepping Stone, I think. Joe Polo was playing drums. Maybe he did Badlands. Yeah, so Lee played guitar and sang Badlands. I was supposed to play guitar with him, but I wimped out on that one. I didn't have a guitar anyways to play, because I used Lee's guitar in the songs that I played, and he was using it. So that's my excuse. There's another song I'm missing. Oh, Lee played Blitzkrieg Bop with Brian on bass. And then we ended the night with Surrender, which, as soon as I screwed up, I got lost in my head for a while. I got it together by the end, but I messed up on Surrender, even though it's a very easy song. and Alan from Aegis Rock was playing guitar on that. Was it Brian Sword on bass? No, Lee played bass on that one, I think. But by the way, I didn't mention Lee McCormick crushed it on the Rip It Out drums. In fact, Rip It Out with me on guitar and Lee on drums, if I can pull it off, that is going to become... I use the Rip It Out drum fills for the end of the show music anyways. The Lee McCormick playing the drums and me on guitar is going to become the new end of show music if I can just get that isolated audio. So look forward to that. I'll try to stick that at the end of this episode, the whole song, if I can get that audio. I know Craig Smith has it on video. I don't know if I can get just the audio for the podcast. So that was the jam, and that was the end of the Nashville Rock Pod Expo. Lots of goodbyes were said. Went home, went to bed Friday night or Saturday night. Let's see. Got up Sunday morning and hung out a little bit at the house with Greg Renoff, Brian Sword, Joe Royland, and Henning Milkey. But I had to head over to the hotel to pick up Eric Miller at 7:30 because me and Eric Miller and Lee McCormick and Lee's companion, Jordana, we're going to head to Memphis. Forgot to mention that I had neglected to get a picture of myself with Ralph and Ian from Rock and Metal Combat. I was really regretting that. Talked to Ian Saturday night late, and he said to call him. They were at the hotel where I was picking up Eric. He said, wake them up. They'll come down and take a picture with me. Which is exactly what they did. So thank you, Ralph and Ian, for getting up to take a picture with me. Really appreciate it. Also, when I arrive at the hotel to get Eric, who is there but Chris Sinzak. So I got to say goodbye one more time to Chris Sinzak and thank him again. And you know, the Rocket Pod Expo, what really struck me was just the friendship and camaraderie that was on display was very special. You felt it. Everyone enjoyed it so much. Meeting each other, hanging out. It was really special. So I know we all feel that way, that we were a part of something special. No doubt about it. So, hey, Chris Sinzak, it was special. It really was. So, yeah, so at the hotel, I get a picture with Ian and Ralph, give Chris a hug, even though he's still busy putting out fires, trying to get another night at the hotel for the DC 101 guy. Poor guy's up in the morning, still with logistics when the X was over. So, yeah, so pick Eric up at the hotel, and Lee, we follow Lee McCormick, even though he lost us at some point. We follow him to Memphis. Get stopped by a train in Memphis. When we arrive in Memphis, we get stopped by multiple trains. I think at least three trains in the same area, in the same spot. And we wait forever. That's when Lee catches up to us, because at some point we fell behind Lee, then Lee stopped to get gas, we got ahead of Lee. Lee catches up to us, pulls right up next to us when we're sitting there waiting for the train. Waiting forever for this fucking train. There's one train blocking one lane, then another train pulls up. We finally go down another street, try to go down another street, another train. Literally, as we're going down the street to go around one train, another train crosses that street. So it was insane how long we waited for these trains. Which, as I was complaining to Eric, you're talking about private industry, blocking a public road to make profits, to earn money for a private industry. They block off and make us wait on a public road. To me, that... I don't see how that's kosher. But that's just my opinion. Anyways, the reason we're going to Memphis is we hit the Stax Museum. Then we hit Graceland. Then we hit Sun Studios. Then we drop by Ardent Studios because I've been emailing with Jody Stevens, a drummer from Big Star. He's not going to be there on Sunday, but he told us we come after 5, there will be people there. But when we get there, Moneybags Yo is recording a session. And the young kid that's working there tells us we really should come back the next day, Monday, today, and get a tour from Jody. Now, I was planning, my original plan was to head out from Memphis early on Monday so I could hit St. Louis on the way home and go to record stores. But instead, Lee had to head out, but me and Eric, this morning, Eric Miller from Pods and Sods, we went back to Ardent Studios. Jody Stevens gave us a tour. I wish it could have been recorded. It probably could have been, but I decided not to inject that dynamic into the... When Jody started talking, it was so great, and it would have been a different dynamic if I was recording it, and I think it was a much better experience that it was just me and Eric and Jody. And he took us through Ardent Studios, and he told us a lot of stories, and me and Eric Miller walked out of Ardent Studios and just went, holy shit! It was so fucking cool. Oh, wow. And might I say also, walking into the room at Sun Studios where That's Alright was recorded, and it's all the original, it's the original tile on the floor, it's the original panels on the walls, it's the original light fixtures hanging from the ceiling. It's, that was unbelievable to walk into the room at Sun Studios where all that stuff was recorded. Very surreal and magical. So it was also incredibly cool to see Graceland, but I think my favorite was just walking into that room at Sun. I really felt it. You really felt the history and how, what took place in that room and how important it was. So, and Ardent was a similar feeling with Jody telling us all the stories and all the pictures and records hanging on the walls. We saw the Mellotron is sitting there that they played on Big Star, first album and the third album. Crazy. So we go to Ardent Studios, then we drive over to the, me and Eric Miller, we drive over to the Civil Rights Museum, which as I was walking up, I realized it's the Lorraine Hotel where Martin Luther King was assassinated. I had seen it so many times in pictures that it's instantly recognizable. And that's where they have the Civil Rights Museum. And it's in the Lorraine Hotel, and it's also across the street in the boarding house where James Earl Ray was. So that was an amazing experience to go to that as well. Then I dropped Eric Miller off at the airport, and here I am on the road to St. Louis. So the plan I had to record just didn't happen. So we were going to record Worst of Bruce Springsteen in the 80s with me and Brian and Lee McCormick. We were going to record Worst of Van Halen Roth albums with Greg Renoff and Brian Sword. Didn't happen. Me and Eric Miller were going to record on the drive to Memphis, but I couldn't get the recorder to work. It seems to be working right now, but there was something wrong with it. It was flatlining when I was trying to get it to work when me and Eric were going to record. So all I really got recorded at the expo was I interviewed Rick Rule from Every Mother's Nightmare. I'm going to ask Craig Smith if I can use the audio. I sat down with those guys and recorded a Kisscovery where I talked about how I got into Kiss. They're going to release that on Pods and Sods Network, but I'm going to ask them if I can incorporate that into this episode here as well, so I can have a little Rock and Pod Expo episode, and I'll play part of when I was on the podcast. I've got that recorded. So that's my weekend. As you can tell, it was insane. So great. I think I bought about 23 records. Lee McCormick very generously gave me a copy of the first Teenage Head album. Joe Roiland very generously grabbed me a copy of Too Hot to Sleep by Survivor. What we're going to do for the next episode is it's going to be all songs from the records I bought on my trip for the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo, which hopefully some will be added very soon when I get to Vintage Vinyl in St. Louis here in less than an hour. So yeah, so now let's hear, hopefully, me with Eric Miller and Craig Smith recorded live at the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo.
Hey, look, we got BJ here.
BJ Kahuna.
Hey, guys.
Brian BJ Cramp Kahuna.
Yes, man.
I'm sitting across from you at a table.
He has a face and a body.
He does.
It's not just a voice.
I think I've only ever seen him dressed as Rick Nielsen.
That's true. That's true.
I've never taken a selfie in my entire life, so yeah, I never post pictures of myself. So everybody's like, "Oh, that's what he looks like." Yeah, yeah.
Right. So how you
feel?
Well,
it's better than the. That's what he looks
that's
like.
That's true.
That's a much worse.
Yeah. It could go much worse. Hear, yeah. Yeah. So how's that? How you feeling? You had a lot to do with today.
Yeah, not even close to as much as Chris, but
you still had a lot to do with today. Oh, what?
I'm exhausted.
I'm here for you. Wow.
I'm
gifts
exhausted
abound.
And confused, and, you know, I'll be figuring out how I feel about everything
right.
in the course of the next couple of weeks.
Right.
Right.
It's been a crazy experience.
Yeah, it has been.
You know.
Did you do any record shopping today, first of all?
Today? No. Yeah, here. But I only bought two records I bought.
Oh, yeah. You're doing a road trip of record stores.
Yeah. Here I bought Wasp, The Headless Children.
I bought Fuck Like a Beast on 7-inch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
You bought that?
Yep.
And I bought the Status Quo or Status Quo double live album.
Nice.
Right. And, so.
All right. Nice.
But we're really here to talk about
and
some
Joe
Kiss.
Roiland
and
we're up with Survivor Too Hot to Sleep.
That's great.
So number three.
So nice.
Awesome. So let's talk Kiss.
Yeah.
Kiss-covery. When did you get into them?
Yeah, I was live on Montcore Radio earlier telling that
where music and minds meet
stories, and I swore, I said shit on the second shit, he stopped me.
Have you done this podcast?
Oh, put this closer?
Yeah.
Yeah, the second shit he informed me, he reminded me I was on live radio. Oh. He's going to get in trouble. So
I must have gone over right after you because he was like, yeah, and BJ was over here. He got an S word twice.
Well, he told me I swore twice, and I was like, I hope the other one wasn't fuck because I have no idea what I said,
right.
You know? I wasn't thinking it. I was like, oh, yeah. I was like, you should have told me. And I was like, oh, yeah, you did tell me I was live on the radio.
Right,
you know,
right.
Kind of
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was 5 years old, 1979. My uncle, my mom's youngest brother, who still lived with his mom. I'm not exactly sure how old he was.
Right.
Late teens, early 20s. Huge Kiss fan.
Yeah. Right?
So I guess that's how I got into Kiss. Like, I know we had a... Do you remember the cassettes that were... There was a black tape with a red and white sticker on it. They were real common cassettes. Like, I think you would go to the store, they'd be hanging three. They'd be in a plastic.
Oh, yeah, black cassettes. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. You remember those? You know what I'm
absolutely.
Talking about? Very familiar.
Are you talking about the ones where the 60-minute were blue and the 90-minute were red?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it was a red one.
Kmart sold those.
And he made me a, like, Best of Kiss.
Yeah.
But it was like right after the solo albums and Dynasty, so, like, he put... So there's a bunch of songs from the solo albums. Like, I Know You Matter to Me was on there. And Hold Me, Touch Me was on there.
Oh, boy.
Radioactive. New York Groove. That's what he picked from the Ace solo album was New York Groove. I used to know more of what songs were on there. But I know that me and my brother, we'd play that tape and we would mime for my parents. They would sit there and watch. But my uncle... His friends had a Kiss tribute band, but they didn't play. They just mimed on stage.
Yeah. Right.
He even has like a...
Like in the 70s.
It's 79. Yeah.
Wow.
And he had like... I remember watching a like 16mm or something film that he had of them like on a sheet at my grandma's house.
Was it the Kiss Through Science Theater dudes?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
I mean, yeah, they would dress up.
and then just they'll mime to the songs for I don't know how big of a crowd, but this one I was five. He decided Gene was my favorite. In fact, I was Gene for Halloween in 1979 with a homemade costume that my dad made out of aluminum foil and shit. I don't know where what happened to it. My dad made me an axe base out of wood.
Really? That's great.
And
that's good parenting is what that
is. Yeah, my dad was great. He is great. But so Gene was my favorite. I had the Gene Mecco doll too. We got it for Christmas, I think. And my brother got Paul, and we have no idea what happened to him.
I had Peter and Peter and Paul.
Yeah.
It was one of those things where the left arm broke off, so the right leg came off with it because they were like rubber banded inside. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know what happened. We never knew what happened to those dolls once. Like, I was into Kiss then, and then I got out of it, and then like back into it like 12, and then we're like, Mom, where are the Kiss dolls?
Right.
Who the fuck knows? I don't know. No, but, yeah, so... Gene's my favorite, so my uncle's like, I'm going to bring Gene over to the house. The guy dressed as Gene.
Right.
I crawled behind a chair and hid, scared shitless, of the real Gene at the fucking house.
That's great.
Five. But he was my favorite. I was him for Halloween, but when he showed up at the house, I hid.
Yeah.
Which Gene would probably be really proud of, because that's what he was going for.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
Wow. Did you know it was like a...
I knew he was coming.
But did you know did you think it was the real Gene, or...
I don't know what I thought.
Yeah.
I know I knew he was coming, and then I freaked out. I probably, like, saw him out the window.
Because if you're five...
Yeah.
Like, you kind of probably still believe in Santa Claus and stuff, right? So you wouldn't know that that's not Gene. You would just, like, it's just
Maybe
it's
I
Gene.
Thought it was really...
It's really Gene.
Yeah. I don't know. I was scared.
That's cool. Did you cry or no?
Did I cry?
Be honest.
Probably. I don't remember. I know I was behind a chair, like between the wall and the chair.
Right.
That's amazing.
Tears are falling, and you like the whole scene was like in sepia tone, except for you. You were.
And I don't think
in color.
I did not see. Once he was in the house, I never saw Gene. Like I hid and freaked out, and then he left. You know, so it was a complete failure of a.
That's
and my
great.
Uncle probably thought, oh, he'll love this.
Right.
We'll bring Gene Simmons over to the house. I did not love it at all.
Wow. That's amazing.
Is your brother older?
No, my brother's younger.
Okay, so he was probably even more terrified.
Yeah, I don't know if he was even... Yeah, I don't know what my brother was doing.
Yeah.
I don't think my brother was into it. I mean, he was too young. But I know he would mime along to the songs with me. Like, you know, I know he would do that. He was, what, three?
So when was the first time you saw them, like in concerts?
Hot in the Shade, which my uncle took me to.
Okay.
Because that was,
You cried
I was 15. I was, 15 when my,
Did Slaughter open that show?
Yeah, I talked to Mark. I told him, I went and told Mark that I told him the loudest concert I ever saw in my entire life was him. Well, it was easily the loudest. It was... Just white noise. Couldn't even hear the music.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
like,
insane.
I could see them on stage and knew that he was singing, but all I heard was...
Wow.
And then he's like, it was probably echoing off the walls or something. No, somebody turned it up too loud because that was nuts. And then I told him I also saw you open for Kiss. And that was the show where Kip Wigger was running across the stage and tripped and fell flat on his face.
Where was that? What's
Alpine Valley.
Okay.
In East Troy, Wisconsin.
Right. Okay.
Like where Stevie Ray Vaughan crashed.
Yeah. Wow, a lot going on there. Jeez, doesn't sound like a great
Kip
place.
Kip Wigger crashed.
Yeah, seriously.
Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Wow. That's true.
Yeah. So did you stay a Kiss fan throughout the entire time? Did you dip out at any point?
Yeah, I wasn't in the music. I didn't get back into music till like maybe like 12.
What a fucking music podcast. What, you ditched music?
Yeah.
How does that happen?
From 6 to 12.
Wow.
Well, what it was my dad had a coordinated effort to try to make me a sports fan. And it failed miserably.
Yeah, fuck that.
Yeah. So I collected baseball cards.
I did too, but hated sports.
Yeah, I didn't give a shit about sports.
Yeah.
I guess... I have a collector's brain.
Right.
So the collecting aspect I like.
That's for you.
Oh. Thank you.
It's a Lenny guitar.
Thanks, Larry.
Nice.
Larry Roberts just gave me a Lemmy guitar pick.
There you go.
Awesome. The longer you stay on, the more gifts you get.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, two gifts during one podcast.
I think it happens when people sit down here because there's been a lot of gift-giving
the
right
gift
there.
Is talking to you guys.
Well, this isn't done yet.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that ends up.
Yes. What were we... What was... Oh, yeah, so...
12.
When I got
12.
Back into music... my friend Nick Pape had Kiss records, and right. I was like, oh, I remember them, and I remember, it's still, Dress to Kill is still my favorite, and I think that was the first one that he, like, dubbed on a tape for me.
Because it's the shortest.
Yeah. And I just loved it. Yeah. And, yeah. And
no, so no memories of hiding behind the chair as soon as you saw those albums again?
Yeah. This was when Asylum was even out.
Right.
So I just got the albums all in some random order.
Yeah.
And yeah. Then, but it was so funny. Dan Menard always said, "Live It Up."
Yes.
And I remember I had somebody made me a tape of "Lick It Up," and I probably didn't have the songs written down. And I thought the song was "Live It Up" for the longest time.
Right.
Even though the album was called "Lick It Up," I thought the song was "Live It Up." And then at some point, I had the epiphany. Oh, it's Lick It Up. That's the album.
At least it's not as bad as the Kistry Science Theater guys. I think it was Lee that thought Love 'Em, Leave 'Em was No More Evil. But I don't think you can't get
no
that bad.
More
evil.
Yeah.
Can I crash and get away with one of those? The one that's always been in my brain.
Wait, who the fuck is that?
Oh, God. It's Joey
fucking
from Rock Trucks
in.
This is my only pod crash for the day.
Like
a lot of other fucking guys
that.
Around here. Can I curse? Okay.
Yeah.
Really, in 1985, I heard a new song called Tear Safari on the radio, and it's always been my favorite song since then. And it makes total sense when I'm six. But oh no, Tear Safari.
I'm so going to hear that. That
you'll never be able to unhear it.
Thanks for that.
Thanks for that. And that was absolutely worth it. Thank
yes,
you.
And picturing what a Tear Safari would be.
Tear Safari.
Well, it happens in the video. It's Bruce is in the middle of it while he's trying to play his goddamn solo.
That's true. And the video made sense when you saw
that's
it.
That's
all right,
a Tear Safari.
In the jungle.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Another huge Kiss moment was getting exposed.
I'm sorry?
Exposed.
Yes.
And I know it's getting late, but those stories don't...
But I had never seen Kiss other than pictures until Exposed. And so seeing those live videos on Exposed just blew my mind at the time.
Yeah.
It was so amazing.
Like, I think I got that hand in hand with my, like, first two Kiss bootleg VHS tapes. So, like, for all the stuff I missed as a kid, I saw some things on TV that I remembered. But finally seeing, like, that kind of stuff, that kind of quality, it really busted open fandom for me again in a big way.
It wasn't just the content, it was like the framing of it with the humor.
And there's tits in it. There's some titty balls in there.
Yeah.
Like and the skits. Who Wants to Be Lonely video.
That's right.
With
right.
Paul's hair.
Right.
That's
right.
That was
censored.
That's right.
Because no one would play it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Right. But yeah, I still remember watching Exposed for the first time and just... And not even knowing what was coming.
Yeah.
And just being astonished, you know? Yeah.
Watched
like,
it
this
over
is the coolest
and over
thing
again.
I've ever seen,
yeah,
you know?
Too. I wore it out.
Yeah.
I had friends, like, every friend I had, whether they liked Kiss or not, came over and watched it. Like, it was amazing.
Yeah. Which, I mean, you know, people our age always probably talk about this, but that's the mystique that in this day and age is lost.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
Because you can't have an experience like me seeing Exposed for the first time.
That's true,
I keep thinking.
I'm sure
the other meetings
are
Exposed. Yeah.
So but, have you seen them in recent years? Like, when's the last time you saw Kiss live?
Have I seen them recently? No. Yeah. I haven't seen them since the farewell tour, appropriately.
Smart.
Since that was the farewell tour.
Right. Yeah, I wish I would have held that line.
Yeah. I would, I have no interest in seeing them with Tommy and Eric, but I would like to take my daughter to it. I'm sure everyone says the same thing, too, but...
I'm taking my girlfriend on the cruise.
She's not going to know the difference. Like, she doesn't enjoy the...
I don't think she would care.
Right.
She doesn't have anything to do with my music. Right. She wants to find her own music, which I think that's a good trait, probably.
Right. Did you, pay it forward and torture your daughter by having a Gene come over the house and have her run behind the couch?
Yeah, when she was five, I'm sure she would have hit, too, yeah. Yeah.
That's great. Speaking of which, there was supposed to be a full, there was a Gene that was going
to
be here.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I said that to Chris earlier. I said, isn't that guy going to be here just a Gene? He's like, oh, I should contact that guy. I haven't heard from him.
Oh.
Yeah, he never came, huh?
He just
But the fucking guys from Raven came in and out, and I never even saw him.
Oh, really?
I missed so much that happened. Wow. Like, I missed the whole Mark Slaughter thing with Talking Metal.
He talked about you the whole time.
Yeah.
There's a kid that came to see the Hot in the Shade tour and complained about the sound. It's fans like that.
You know, what kind of asshole walks out during I Still Love You? That's what he said. Awful.
Did they do that on the Hot in the Shade tour?
No, but that's not the point. You don't question the joke.
I mean, they opened with I Stole Your Love, which is my favorite Kiss song.
I'll never forget being at that concert and being like, I can't believe that they're digging this deep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the new Analyze Live Uncensored, this was miles from that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I remember calling my uncle and being like, would you take us to the Kiss concert? And he was like, yeah, that would be cool, because he had it. He was into them when he was younger, but.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, Kiss were my number one favorite band, like my whole childhood, you know, obsessed.
Yes.
With them. So.
So why are you such an asshole about I Still Love You?
Are you?
I just.
Oh, yeah. He is. No. Oh, yeah. You didn't hear his worst of Kiss episode.
Yeah, I picked it as one of my top five worst Kiss songs of the 80s. I kind of did that just to be an asshole.
Right. I mean, not only did I unsub, I nearly canceled the flight here.
No, I've never liked
that. And yet
that
he
song.
Likes the percussive melody of Who Let the Dogs Out.
Yeah. I sent you a.
He's a juggalo. Did you know he's a closet juggalo?
Yeah, yeah.
You may not know this about him.
Yes.
That did not sound convincing, did it? Remember when I said that? When I said the juggalo thing?
It was your best outtake, because you hardly got it out before you cracked up. So great.
Those outtakes are awesome, aren't they?
Those are good times. So favorite album is Dressed to Kill.
Yeah. Least? Yeah, every song is great.
Okay, least favorite?
Least favorite Kiss album?
Yeah. Yeah, say it.
Carnival
Look me
Soul.
In the eye, asshole, and say it.
Carnival of Souls is not even a Kiss album.
It's more of a Kiss album than some Kiss albums.
Then what?
Albums that don't have all four of them playing on it. Probably more of a Kiss album than Unmasked is.
It's so obviously forced, and I mean, they're...
Can't Kiss grow up?
No,
let's change the topic. Can't
pretending.
Kiss grow up?
Ken and Gary sit there listening to me.
Oh,
they're
yeah,
so
this
sick
is...
of hearing this shit.
Yeah. Everybody is kissed out at this point.
Oh, man, that Carnival of Souls episode.
I should point out, Craig, we're the only ones still recording.
Are we? Yeah.
Everyone else is. We're the only ones that have mics out.
Well, Lee still got his out as well. Right. We could not talk to BJ.
Yes.
I could not yell at BJ.
We could have.
You know?
Although I need him for a ride tomorrow.
Oh, well, yeah.
So I didn't record shit today.
Wow. Goodness.
Yeah, we're going to Graceland, and we're going to sing Hound Dog Without You. It's kind of a sad thing.
We're
going
to miss you.
Yeah, I'm a little bummed about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next year.
Or no, Since My Baby Left Me. Yeah. Heartbreak Hotel.
You got what?
That's what they sing.
Who this? Who's this? Oh, look who this is. It's Baco.
I'm not stealing BJ's thunder. By the way, we have not talked at all today. I'll just say hello, BJ, and I'll let you back.
It's been a blur.
it's amazing, but when you're done, maybe we can chat a little bit.
Okay. Yes. Well, I was going to say, you know that song that Kiss did with Elvis, right?
Wait, which one is that?
Well, I love the one I wrote on Facebook, which I didn't see anybody like. Don't Be Secretly Cruel.
Oh.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Wow.
I'm more into, like, Jailhouse Rock and Roll Hell.
No.
Right That's, on.
It's not as good All as right. Don't Be Secretly Cruel.
It is better.
Come on. It's not a goddamn
it's a
contest,
guess,
Derek.
He's like, it is when I come up with one. You're like, that sucks.
Oh, I thought
well,
of
you
got to
follow the rules
I
of
thought
it.
Of one that I didn't. I don't think I wrote on there when you and Ryan were doing
Oh, the back and forth.
Baby, let's put the house in house.
That's great.
Wow. That's cool. Crazy.
Should we try to squeeze in Gary or Joey?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah, you want to do...
Yeah, let's wrap up with BJ. No.
We're wrapping up.
Yeah. Anything else you want to say? Why don't you plug your podcast?
Yeah. Where can people listen to you if they have any...
Why are you laughing about that?
Yeah. I did a Kiss Connections 3 episode pretty recently where I played I took four songs that Wicked Lester recorded that they didn't write. I played different versions of each of the songs that were recorded and released by different artists.
Okay.
I was pretty proud of that ridiculousness.
He has the most like, thoughtful themes.
He really does.
Yeah.
I don't want to give him a compliment.
About parenthetical titles.
That is great. Wait, which one was the one that you did the Trooper theme for?
That was the episode.
The episode.
Because it was all songs that started with the.
That was pretty great. I didn't expect that coming out of a BJ Cramp. That's awesome.
I was pretty nervous about it.
So you didn't say, where can we find you?
Huh?
Where can our millions of listeners find you?
Most of them probably know. rockandorrollpodcast.blogspot.com or Facebook. If you just Google Rock and or Roll Podcast, all the...
You'll get a bunch of Simpsons videos.
No, if you Google Rock and or Roll, you will. But if you go
add podcast, that's the end, that's the
then
key.
Then you get a bunch of me, yeah.
Okay. Well, yes. Sounds good.
Well, good.
It's been a pleasure.
BJ. Yeah, it's...
Amazing to meet you guys.
Likewise.
Amazing to meet you.
Yeah, an understatement if I ever heard one.
All right, now we're going to hear the interview I did at the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo with Rick Rule, the lead singer of Every Mother's Nightmare, an 80s heavy metal, glam metal band out of Nashville. And at the very beginning of the interview here, when it starts playing, I just got him to sign my copy on vinyl of the very first Every Mother's Nightmare album. And so that's what we're talking about. We're talking about vinyl and how it was being phased out at that point when their album came out on vinyl. So, all right, I hope you enjoy the interview that I did with Rick Rule of Every Mother's Nightmare.
I remember when Hot in the Shade came out, that was in 89. Then when we went to the record store the day it came out, they only had one copy in the whole store on vinyl.
Oh, really?
So I know that's around the time that they were really like phasing it all out. So yeah, this is probably pretty rare, but I don't know.
I remember when that came out, they said, at the label, they said they were only pressing 2% of...
That's an awesome
100?
Yeah, that's an awesome fact to know. So all the formats, CD, cassette, and vinyl, 2% of it was vinyl.
Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy.
1990.
It's
wow.
Cool though, yeah, that so, today now vinyl's coming back though. That's kind of
yeah,
neat,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. Yeah.
I broke out my turntable. I just can't figure out where to get a needle. Oh, really?
Yeah, you know, right now, cassette tapes are worth more than CDs, like old stuff.
Yeah.
It's crazy how it's like, and now people are collecting cassettes. So.
You know what's harder to find on the cassette is a cassette player.
Yeah. Well, so I guess I wanted to ask you about, well, he was talking about the bands you were in before Every Mother's Nightmare.
Yeah.
So when you were starting band, like what year did your first band form? Like mid-80s?
Oh, yeah, real early 80s. I was in a band called Hard Knocks. They had a record out, a local record in my hometown. It was Mark of the Rocker, Hard Knocks, and they had a kind of my mentor, Gene Hadley, was singing, and they had problems with him, and I went and tried out to play rhythm guitar for them. And the next night, they said, "How about you singing?" So I started singing, and you know, next thing you know, we're playing in a trailer, and there's a lot of people there, and I thought, well, that's pretty cool.
You hear that about a lot of guys that started out in a band playing an instrument, and then somehow they ended up
We're not good at the instruments. We're not good at none of them, actually. But,
yeah.
I don't know. I just like, it felt comfortable getting to tell stories, you know. And,
yeah, yeah. So Hard Knocks, was that like a metal band, or are you trying
just
to be
rock?
Metal,
you know, it was really along the lines of that. It's weird to say, but the cover and the very first Cinderella cover is almost
really?
It is that definitely that type. Yeah. You know, that style. Just, you know, I don't know what the label you put on it. It's just rock and roll back then, I guess. You know,
yeah,
I guess they would call it the hair rock or hair metal or whatever.
Yeah.
But just rock and roll. You know, that's the way I see it all is.
You were doing that, like, were you in that band even before Cinderella came out?
Yeah, we were rapping. I mean, I remember I was at a party when the first Cinderella album came out. They were, you know, somebody had it and they were playing it there.
Right.
Yeah.
So you were glammy.
Kind of glammy. Yeah, I guess you'd
metal.
Say. Yeah, spandex, glammy, you know, hair up.
Yeah.
Just a mess. Looks like your mom sometimes.
So you signed to Arista, and Arista, were they trying to build like a roster of rock bands at the time? Like they signed Babylon AD,
right?
And you, and Enough's Enough was a little later,
right?
So they were trying to maybe keep up with what the other labels were doing.
I think so.
You were one of the first kind of this kind of bands, right?
Well, see, when I first played for, we were doing, you know, playing shows for A&R Men, and Mitchell Cohen came down from Harrison. He was like, you know, he brought us to New York, wanted us to play for Clive and the whole label after we had, you know, done a little other showcase for Clive. But, you know, everybody at the label was like, you know, Mitchell Cohen brought a rock band up, you know. They never brought rock bands in. So I think we were kind of right there. I think the only other rock band they had before us was maybe Crocus for a while.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, and that's one of the reasons we went there. Clive Davis was like, man, I want to do this and this and that. And I was like, man, we'll be the only rock band on there, so we'll get a, you know,
yeah,
all the effort will be on
us.
Like, we just wasn't good enough to do it yet. We didn't. We played 13 shows and had a record deal. Like, so
wow.
We didn't know what we're doing. Like, okay, we're recording, okay?
So, who is the guy that produced this? Because I looked him up. He doesn't have a lot of other credits.
Eli Ball, he was doing, he had a company called Phoenix Productions. He did a couple of records here and there. He was, he was the most white unrhythm guy I've ever met in my life. But he was a good dude. Personally, he was a good dude.
Yeah.
But I think he did the Delta Rebels. I don't know if you ever heard of that.
Yeah, I saw that on Wikipedia, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I never heard it.
The record is awesome. It's great.
Delta
it's got the, you know, Damon Johnson's brother Kane played with him. And,
that's
so,
what that is. Okay.
So, you know, we hadn't done much, and he hadn't done much either. So.
Yeah. a lot of this sounds like it's maybe just one guitar track. There's not a lot of overdubs.
It's just raw. I mean,
yeah.
That was the whole thing with it. The way we did it, he brought some people in, and we just went in there and played like we were doing a show. And, you know, if it was good enough, the energy was right, you know. Like I said, we didn't know what the hell we were doing, but we were, if it felt good, like we were live, he printed it and we went with it. We didn't know a whole lot about overdubbing.
Yeah. Well, some of these sites, I think there only is one guitar track.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. It's just, you know.
And, I mean, in 1990, bands that looked like this.
And have one guitar track.
You probably had big dreams, right? Like, you know, you were on, I remember you were on Heavier as well all the time.
Oh, yeah. All we had, you know, it was a little funny. You know, we were like, wanted a record deal. We didn't know what we were going to do when we got one, but that was the goal. We wrote so many songs, and we were trying to do this. And so a lot of it, we were just kind of looking, going, wow, you know. All of a sudden, we're living in a store hall. I put this band together down the road here in a store hall, a 10 by 20 store hall with no windows, no bathroom, nothing in it, and lived in it for almost a year. And so then all of a sudden, I'm down here in this studio recording it, and it is, you know, we're doing $100,000 records, $300,000 records.
Yeah.
You know, and last week we were over here trying to scrape up money to go to Mrs. Winter's, get a biscuit. So, you know, it was cool. We had big dreams. We were like, oh, yeah, this is great. we didn't ever think about it if it was going to end.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this music was exploding.
Yeah.
And then I was going to ask you, like, so did you write the ballad specifically to try to have a hit ballad? Like, were you...
Not at the time. Just from listening to the radio back in the day, you know, everybody had a ballad. There's always an album and they had the ballad. But I don't remember just writing, I've got to have a ballad. It's more, I'm all gut. So, you know, I think when Malone started playing that riff, it just kind of fell into a ballad or a slower song. I don't even know if it's a ballad because it's about masturbation more than anything. So,
I don't know. Yeah, you told me that.
I don't know if that's a ballad or not. But,
yeah.
You know, the way we were looking at it, this song, and I play it every show we play it because it's... You know, it's nice to see the people that know it and they come out and want us to play it. So. But you know, we always looked at it, you have to have a ballad to be valid. And,
right.
But, you know, I was more into the real country stuff like Lord Willing and, you know, Hard to Hold, stuff like that. Easy Come, Easy Go.
Yeah, that was another really interesting thing is that you incorporated, like, the Southern rock elements.
We can't be nothing but listen to my voice.
Yeah, right. But there's a lot of real metal sounding stuff out here, too, like Walls Come Down stuff. Just like
on our new album, we put a live version of Walls Come Down on the new record. So.
Really? That's probably my favorite out here, maybe.
Yeah, we play that one every night, too. That's a... You know, that's the first song that kind of just got us in public eyes.
Was that your first video on MTV?
Yeah, everything, yeah. We tried a video right before that, and it was maybe 3 or 4 songs live, and it came out so horrible, the bass wasn't on, and it was horrible, but, yeah, that was our first, you know, they got a big old building and people in it, and we shot a video and learned.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I mean, it was in such a crazy time. I would, you know, there's a real Zeppelin feel to some of the music I love to hear you find.
Oh, man, you know, I like grew up listening to all that stuff. You know, that's all it is I grew up listening to everything from Marshall Tucker, you know, Elvin Bishop. My uncle worked for Charlie Daniels for 29 years, and then I grew up, you know, first concert I ever saw was Alice Cooper. And then, you know, Van Halen and, you know, Zeppelin, everything. My uncle, he was a great drummer. I grew up, you know, smelling, what is he smoking? It smells so funny, but and listening to Zeppelin and, you know, it's just what you grow up with. You channel it back through. It's just, I think you do anyway.
And then did you get into metal like Motley Crue and Rat?
Oh, yeah. Rat was my, I loved Rat when they first came out. I saw it and I was like, man, this is going to, I remember I was working in a little store and they had a TV and a video was on. I was like, this is going to be humongous, you know. Yeah. I think it was Round and Round or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, and my mom ended up, my mom's a barber. She cut their hair for most of their later videos off of Slip of the Lip and all that stuff.
Really?
And I met them guys and one of my friends was their wardrobe, Annie Krakauer. She was their wardrobe chick, so met those guys. Yeah, I into all that stuff, man. You know, Queensryche, all that stuff when it was just, you know,
right.
Queensryche was just surfacing through right there until Minecraft came out. So.
Yeah.
All metal, all rock. If good is good, it don't matter, you know.
Right, right. What was I gonna ask? I guess just the idea of getting lumped in with all the hair metal and having the ballad and at the time, like, how do you feel about how people look at all of that in retrospect? Like, there's a lot of, like, you know, people look.
Oh, we're definitely, we get the label of, you know.
Yeah.
We're a hair band. We were just four idiots from East Tennessee that, you know, played music. I don't know. It's just, I guess you got to label stuff. I don't know. I don't know how to explain it, you know.
Yeah. How far did Love to Make You Blind go, like, as a single? Did it?
I think it went to number 3 there for a minute. So, and I was surprised it stayed at a number 11 for 6 weeks, I want to think, something like that. But, I mean, it did for my demo tape before that to that, it was phenomenal.
But then it took you what? It wasn't until 93 that the next album came out.
And the Wake Up Screaming. Well, that was when, you know, grunge was coming. We were out on the road and grunge and all that stuff was formulating. And we had a, as they wanting a, they were wanting another Lefty Make You Blind. And that's, you know, the record company, that's what they, that's what they wanted. And we were sending them, you know, this darker stuff that, you know, like 90% of the Wake Up Screaming album we wrote from stuff we were seeing on the road. And, you know, we're, grunge bands are starting to come in, and, you know, they wasn't, you know, wasn't happy-go-lucky. They were burning, you know. So.
That's what I was going to ask you. Like, what kind of bands were you touring with?
We were, I mean, there was a, we did a lot of bands where they were just opener bands from them towns. Like, and I remember playing Seattle, and we had two opening bands. And
so you were doing headlining, like, smaller places?
Yeah, just clubs. And, and these bands were coming in, and, you know, they were right there doing what Kurt and all them guys were doing. And, you know, they were all in the same town, so they were all kind of circulating through. So, we were, that was our biggest fight with the label. Like, this is what's happening. We're out here. This is what's coming. And after we did that record, we wrote a, for the third record, we wrote 5-6 songs and sent it to them. And they were just like, no, this is nothing like the first record. And it was like, you know, I sent them 5 songs and sent them a couple more demos. And it was just like, you know, they wasn't going to accept nothing. So I just quit sending and we quit talking and moved on down the road.
So you were working on the third record and it just didn't
happen. You know, we'd send stuff and they were like, this ain't got a ballad. It ain't this and that. I don't live ballad. I live day by day.
Well, the second album, what's his name, Kevin Elson, that produced it?
Yeah.
He produced Final Countdown, Escape for Journey.
Yeah. But our records don't sound nothing like that. No, we had a, no, he, who did that? He did two or three songs. I can't remember. I know we did the whole album with Jim Green. He did the last Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Also, Kevin Elson produced the whole Wake Up Screaming.
No, he did I did a song with him. Some writer, they gave me an offer. I said, if you'll do these two songs, we'll give you this much money. We'll get one of them on a movie track. And one of them was Tobacco Road, and David Lee had already done it, you know. And I didn't want to do it, but they were, I sold my soul to the devil. They said, we'll give you $30,000, we'll get it on a movie track, whatever. So I put it on my record, sold my soul to the devil. So
and I paid didn't for get it. On the soundtrack?
They didn't get nothing. It was awful, you know. I didn't want to do it. I remember doing that song with Elson. I had a, I think it was If I Had My Way, maybe, or one of those. But, you know, I just, we were in a different spot, and this stuff was way happier than we were. And it just, you know, it was at the end of our term. We'd already sold our soul.
Yeah, by the time your record comes out, it's like there's no market for it anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
But it was a lot more produced than this album. So how long did it take you to make the record? Was it a long time?
It was more on those couple of songs that we were trying to mess with because, you know, we just wasn't into the song, you know. So I know the one song we probably recorded 10 times. This never would, you know, we could play it and it was there, it just didn't have no life, you know what I'm saying, didn't have no life or feel to it. So. And just, I think they even brought Thompson Barbiero in on the song, you know.
Really? Yeah.
It wasn't there, it was over. It, you know, music had changed. That's what I like about today's music. It's everywhere, you know. You
can look anywhere. Yeah, an audience.
Plus you can look anywhere and find something good, and good is good no matter what. So
the label, like, I remember in 93, grunge had come in, but all the bands are still trying to hang on, and so the label is still trying to, like, tweak the record and try to make it better, and they finally put it out, but there's just not, it's just hopeless at that point, right?
Yeah, it's just, you know, radio don't want it, people don't want it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's you know, that's just the way it goes. That's
crazy.
What's happening with country right now. You know?
I was in college in 92, 93, and I remember how insane it was, how everything just flipped on a dime.
Yeah, it's like
overnight.
And that's what we were telling the label. Like, man, y'all just don't know what's happening out here right now because this is, you know. I think the music was more real then, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know? I still love this stuff.
Oh, I mean, that's my first. The only thing I wish all my friends, you know, like Anthony and them, their first record had a more polished sound and Roxy Blue. Their Todd's album had a more polished sound, and that's the only thing I was like, I don't know if that was the right move or not, but that's just the way we were. We were just, you know, that's the way we played. We're just, you know, grip it and rip it, and it's rock and roll.
So the production on the first album was kind of intentional? Like you wanted it to sound kind of raw and sounded live?
That's why that's why we were just set up like we were doing a live show every night in the studio, and he'd bring some people in, and we would just... And pick the best ones out of it. You know, it ain't perfect. And there's some parts of it that's not even good. you know, it's just it's what it is, you know. We were, like I said, we played 13 shows and wrote a handful of songs, and all of a sudden, like, hey, y'all got a record deal. All right, what do we do now?
Yeah, that's crazy. And so how long have you had the band back together now?
Believe it or not, I've had the band, I took 2 years off since this.
That's it?
Yeah, I mean, I've done a couple other records with a smaller label. I've done one by myself, two by myself. Man, I always just play. I mean, I got in this because of writing songs, you know. I wanted a record deal, but I just like writing songs, I like playing. And, so I've had a version of this band the whole time. I took 2 years off, had a kid, had two kids. And when I put the new band together, I just, I was kind of tired of me being the only person trying to focus in on everything. So I got five guys, and I was like, man, I want to do a record. I want five people in it doing the same thing. Everybody's heading the same place. And, you know, other than my bass player, Troy, I've been with him 21 years now. You know, I just lucked up. It's hard to find a band with chemistry. You know, you can get 20,000 people to play with you until the chemistry's good. And I just lucked across that again. And, you know, we did a new record, and it's getting ready to come out now. Just going out and playing, that's my all-time love is 10 people, 2,000, 200, I don't care, as long as they're into what's happening.
Do you travel around and play and tour? Yeah.
We just got back, we just did Wisconsin, we did Green Bay last Friday, Wisconsin with Power Man 5000, and then we had the odd mix, Power Man.
Yeah.
But it was actually cool, and then played Chicago Sunday night and came home. For a couple of days, and now I'm here, and now I'm going home to shoot video.
What kind of crowds do you see like in Chicago?
Man, it's cool these days. You see, we played Chicago the other night, and this girl came up to me, and she goes, I want you to know I broke into China Club 3 times to see y'all back in the day. And I said, man, I can't believe, you know, we played a little small place. It was just a stopover on the way home. And there's a whole lot of new people that I wouldn't expect to see at the shows from the new stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then, you know, just everywhere I go, I meet up and bring an old shirt or one of these or something. So, you know, and that's cool. I dig that. That's, you know, I wasn't trying to be no preacher, though. I'm just telling people what I lived on this record, and this is what I lived on the next one.
Yeah.
And maybe there'll be some better shit happening on the next record.
So what's the new album called?
It's called Grind.
Grind, that's right.
It started out, I just did a 5-song EP, and we were just selling it off the bus when we were playing. And I ran into Bill Chavis from Highball Records, and I'd known him for years, and he said, man, let's do a full record. So I went back to the studio, and we did 3 more songs, and then I put 3 live songs, one off of Smoking Delta Voodoo record, one off of Wake Up Screaming, Closet Down the Hall, and then Walls Come Down off the first record, live, and then did put 3 videos and a live version of Push. So we just wanted a little bit of everything, and it's pretty good. The new record, it's what we do, but we got Justin Reimer, who's a great producer. He kind of put a modern twist, and a good thing.
So it's probably pretty heavy. Right?
Yeah, it's a lot thicker. It's a lot thicker. And, there's a little more production than that one. But it's still real raw. You know?
Yeah. It's awesome that you're still doing it.
I love it, man. So cool. What else can I do besides mow grass?
Yeah.
I could be a drunk or something. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Man, I just I go out and I play music on the weekends, and the weekends I don't have to go out and play. I get on my motorcycle and go out and go fast in the country.
Did you guys go out like Headbangers Ball and get interviewed by Adam Curry and shit like that, or Ricky Rockman? Or were you guys ever on Headbangers
Ball? Oh yeah, man. Yeah,
I used to watch it every
Saturday. Yeah, I played a what was the club he had in L.A.? We played there a couple times.
Cat House.
Cat House. Oh yeah, played the cat. Yeah, played the cat. had a big time there. We've been everywhere. We try to kick in every door we can run into. So.
Yeah, it's awesome, too. Yeah,
they won't let us on the cruise, though.
A great experience.
Oh, man, it makes a good songwriting. Being broke down on the side of the road.
Yeah, that's a great experience.
8 people in a van. Awesome.
Yeah, right. The good and the bad.
Oh, yeah. It all comes out good in the end.
Yeah, yeah.
This thing kind of blew me away. I didn't know what I was getting into today. He just said, come up here and do that. I got my boy right here, Paizon. He's been with me for probably 20 years, and he just hollered at me, go there, go here.
Oh, really?
But, hey, I appreciate it, man. Thanks, man. Yes, sir.
Alright, so that was my interview with Rick Rule from Every Mother's Nightmare, recorded live at the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo. And now, to play us out.
What does that mean, to play us out? I don't know what that means, to play us out. What does that mean? To end the show?
Yeah.
So at the very end of the night at the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo, we had a jam session organized and put together by Lee McCormick from the Tramps Like Us podcast, and here at the end of the episode, you're going to hear Rip It Out from the Ace Frehley solo album, the first song. I always end every episode with the awesome drum fills in that song. Well, this version of Rip It Out is Lee McCormick playing the drum fills. You've got me on rhythm guitar. You've got Gary Schaller from the podcast on lead guitar. He crushes it on the solo. And you've got Brian Sword from the Double Stop. Listeners of Rock and Or Roll are very familiar with Brian from the Worst Of episodes and the Getting Bossy series. And then you've got Julian Gill, author of many Kiss books. Julian Gill from Kiss FAQ, the website and the podcast. The author of the great Kiss album Focus books. He's been on the show for... We did the Zodiac Mind Warp episode, and he did the High and Dry episode with me for the Def Leppard series. So you've got Julian Gill on vocals, myself, and Gary Schaller of the podcast on guitar, and the Canadian rhythm section of Brian Sword and Lee McCormick. And this is Rip It Out from the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo End of the Night Jam.
Go, BJ!
I'll be back.